Maintenant, les deux communications suivantes traiteront du palais de Shahristan. Et la première, celle de Pavel Luriev. Il est conservateur des musées à l'Ermitage à Saint-Pétersbourg, directeur de la section Asie centrale, Caucase et Crimée, et directeur de la mission archéologique de l'Ermitage à Pinjikent. Pavel Luriev.
Dear friends, dear colleagues, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers of this symposium, Franz Grenet and his team, for making this conference. I guess it is the first conference on Ustrushana ever, or ever in the ever in the West at least. And so this is a very specific region, and one of the points which I would like to start with this paper is that in Tajikistan, to the north of Zarafshan Valley, during the last 10 years, there have been no archaeological excavations. After the excavations of Soren Stark and Eshan Kulov, there have been no newer excavations, to my knowledge at least. And in this case, we have to return back to the materials which have been discovered long ago in Ustrushana and not analyzed and published properly, or not analyzed and in this paper, I would like to propose just a kind of few thoughts about one of the best masterpieces of Ustrushana art, the lunette or timpan from Kalaikahkaha Palace, which have very little been published or analyzed. And in this paper, I cannot give the complete picture of this thing, because it is very difficult to reach it and to analyze it, despite many things have been done, but just to put some ideas about that item. First of all, so this masterpiece, this wooden lunette, it is a burnt wood, as it is typical for the lowland territories of Central Asia. So the wood itself does not survive, only ashes survived. So it is now available and seen to everybody in the Museum of Antiquities in Dushanbe. But actually, nobody can see anything there. So it is a very good for making selfies, but it's very difficult to find anything behind their behind the plastic glass, in which it is mounted. And no complete picture of, no complete drawing of this thing survives as well. And so in this paper, I rely very much on the photos taken by the self-portraitist here, by Maria Gerve, our restorer from Pinjikent excavations, and also very much from the field documentation, which was preserved in Dushanbe and was published like several years ago with the efforts of a Japanese team, of which Etsuko Kageyama here was an essential part. So no minute images, just and even here many things cannot be approached as a whole, so many lacunas are made. So this is the only publication I know was repeated two times about this lunette by Numon Nigmatov, the excavator of Kalaikahkaha site, where he gave the descriptions of the item. He laudated the successes of archaeology in Soviet Tajikistan, and then he compared some pieces with Shahnameh, without, unfortunately, without giving some more analytical part of the story. And this is the Japanese edition, from where many scans will be shown today. So this is the palace of Kalaikahkaha, the palace of the, as it is usually supposed, the palace of rulers of Ustrushana, of Afshins, located in Shahristan, northern Tajikistan. So this is the field map, and so one of the reception hall here is the biggest main throne hall, which is shown here. And this lunette, this tympan, was located at the entrance to this main throne hall and was found fallen. I don't have the report, so I don't know, was it inside or outside, and what was face down or face up and so on. I even don't know for sure who was the restorer who worked very much with this item. So initially in this large reception hall, the lunette might have been placed here. This large reception hall with oblong features and several stages of the floor is typical for palaces in Sogdiana and neighboring regions. It was decorated with wood and with paintings, of which very little survived. And so among the documentation published by the Japanese team, there is this map of this part of the hall showing pieces of wood which were discovered there, and also describing some paintings which were also there and which seem to be now completely lost. And even that time after the fire, it did not survive very well. So the lunette, the idea of this tympanum, the roundel above the entrance, above the door, is quite typical, well, actually for all the architecture in Western Eurasia, I would say, but also for Sogdiana itself. And we have several examples for these lunettes, but not, but none of the same size and elaboration as the one from Shahristan. So this is a reconstruction of a lunette from Sector 3 in Panjikent, made by Voronina in early 50s. Do we have a stick? Yeah, so this roundel, this ornament around, and in the center I see something similar to a dragon or water dragon or makara, something like that. This is our excavations in Panjikent in 2016, a wooden panel with what we think is the depiction of worship of Buddha, and it was found in this room around here, and this room doesn't have place for a wooden ceiling. And so we can suppose that it covered the entrance to the room. So the outline, the shape of this thing did not survive, so it is not real cuts, it is what remained. But maybe it was a roundel like that. It unfortunately remains a hypothesis. And the very recent find of 2017, also of Japanese archaeologists working at Kafirkalania, Samarkand, which who found a panel and with worship scene, and this lunette with a worship scene, which has to be dated to 5th or 6th century of common era. This shape also might indicate that it was something above the door. So looking at this I think we can recognize that it is easily recognized that it can be divided in several parts and several registers, which are separated from one another with ornamental pieces. So there is a central part and a surrounding part. In the central part, we can recognize three registers: the lower register, which was described by Nigmatov in better detail; middle register, rather thin, maybe decorative; and the upper register. Then there is inner ornamental semicircle and 17 roundels, 17 small roundels with depictions of combat. And outside is the outer ornamental semicircle. So it's very huge, it's very large, it's almost 3 meters wide, and it is made of three pieces of wood. Two of them, this is a borderline, are attached to one another very well, and the third one is a kind of what seems to be found later. So in the field documentation, we often see the things done with the lower part, but the upper part was maybe done in the next year, of which the documentation did not survive well. Now this happens in archaeological stories. So these roundels, I will speak now mostly about roundels, 17 in number, they all demonstrate the combat, the individual combat, mostly of two warriors. These two warriors, these two champions are depicted like three people. So it is a combination of the process of battle and the result of combat. So here we see two warriors fighting, and under their feet we see one of them killed, fallen on the ground. This interposition of the beginning and the end of the battle is quite common in pre-Islamic Iranian art. So the first thing which comes to our mind are the many examples in Sasanian silver, when the king is fighting an animal, a game, and then this game is fallen on the ground, or in Panjakent painting, which, for example, the Amazon's Hall, where we see this rider fighting here and defeated and fallen to the ground here. So this is interposition, and it explains why in the very most of the recognizable roundels there are three people. So I will show briefly some of them as far as we can reach them. So the first to the lower left one, yeah, two warriors in draperies without armor are fighting one another, and the one is defeated, probably this one. But the dresses are basically the same, so we can recognize this shield, which is typical to various depictions of shields in other Sogdian paintings. We see warriors also in this wide draperies in Panjakent paintings. The next roundel, it did not survive completely, and we see here that at least one of the warriors, but probably two warriors, were in armor. So it is the battle of armored warriors, and one is also depicted at the bottom. So they have a typical V-shaped collar, which we find sometimes in other examples of Sogdian paintings, also with depiction of kind of champions. The third roundel, also two warriors without armor, and the one is fallen down, and so this one is with rich draperies, and probably this is he. The fourth one doesn't preserve very well. We see one armed warrior and a part of the fallen warrior as well. The fifth is outstanding in respect that it is a dragon fight. So we have only two figures here. One is the champion on the horse without armor, and another is a dragon. So the legs of the horse are captured by the tail of the dragon, and the similes from Panjakent, from Rustam painting are self-evident. It's a sea link which came to the light in Panjakent in 2016, also with the legs of the horse playing some game with the curls of the tail of a dragon. The roundel 6 also seems to contain a dragon fight. I don't have a better image, so it's impossible to get it. So this is a warrior, and this seems to be a widely open mouth of the dragon. So dragon is going to devour a champion, and it's a very common feature in Indo-European lore that in order to kill a dragon, you have the dragon to let you be eaten, and then you kill him from inside. We have the same in Rustam's room in Panjakent, for example, and we have the same in the story of Isfandiyar in Shahnameh. The next one are two champions, two warriors in the turnover collar, also very typical in Sogdian art, and one of them defeated, the same one. The eighth one, it's impossible to reach it now, seems to have the backside of a tail of a horse. That's what we have today. I wouldn't comment on number 9. Number 10, also difficult to make a photo. So this seems to be the head of a dragon, yeah, which goes here. And the writer is very, very untypical. So his dress is unlike the other dresses. So it doesn't have draperies. He doesn't have armor. He is not sitting on the saddle, but just standing on the top of a horse as if going to jump. And his or her hairstyle and the outlook is kind of feminine. So maybe it's a lady warrior, but I cannot be sure. Number 11 is maybe the best preserved one in the upper part. So a champion is here. He is a normal human in draperies, and here is a demon. The demon is riding a felin, and he has a very frightening face with enlarged features, and here he is naked, only with a strip of textile on his around waist. And here he is defeated with legs and arms cut. Round 12, also two warriors without draperies. Number 15, we see a part of a very well done armor of a warrior and his helmet, but not much else survived. Yeah, round 16, also two armored warriors fighting with one another, and one of them is defeated. And round 17, there are these two warriors with a bigger shield at the top and without armor. So that's it. These are these 17 roundels, which at the beginning I thought that these 17 roundels should depict one and the same story, the development of one and the same epic, but I don't really, I'm not really sure about that now. So this is the description of them, making a kind of a model what can be done. Unfortunately, couldn't be reached today. So when in July I come to Dushanbe, I will try to look more with better care to these three roundels first of all. So the symmetry of composition is quite approximate. So the right hand and the left hand, they don't correspond to one another exactly. And what is important that in the case when we can identify the fallen warrior as one of the two of his dress, of his garments and so on, we can see that the fallen warrior has his head towards him during the battle. So he falls like head behind. There are no cases of combat of a champion with armor and without armor. They were knights, they were gentlemen, they didn't fight somebody who is not equipped well. And so the possibility of single hero in all roundels is hardly possible, because usually we identify the same character with the same garments. But we don't have these cases, so maybe one and the same character is with sometimes in armor, sometimes without armor, but we cannot identify him. In one case, it looks like a woman, like a lady warrior. And so the figures of warriors vary slightly from one another, while horses are depicted quite stereotype way. It is also a feature of many Sogden paintings. That's enough for the roundels, and now we return to the central field. So there is the upper part, middle part, and lower part. The lower part was explained by Nigmatov as an image of Zahak, as he says, a demon, and four warriors from each side are attacking him. So this is the central figure, and eight warriors, four from each side. Among them, one can recognize the ones with armor and without armor. The next middle register seems to depict a kind of dancers or acrobats. What is their role in the story is not sure, and maybe it was a decorative element, as in the case of these acrobats on the sides. And the upper register of the central field, which shows these strange figures at two sides and some vertical things in the middle. Very important is a remains of another character depicted here, very fragmentary survival. And so what we see here, I see like three animals or three-headed animal, less likely, at two sides of the central thing. They are winged. So here is the wing, here is the wing. And so that reminds, first of all, the frontal depiction of a chariot drawn by symmetric monsters, which has many parallels in the classical Western art and in Iranian art as well. So this is a Coptic, pre-Coptic, more or less contemporary. This is an older Roman mosaic of Neptune. So there should, in the center, there should be a chariot and kind of monsters at two sides. It is known in Iranian art as well. So this is the famous bull with so-called cloak of Khosroes, yeah, with the same frontal depiction of a driven cart. And this is the Siling, Mitra or Srausha, how do you? Mitra in the chariot in Sasanian ceiling. Yeah. And very unusual is the image of these monsters. So I don't know if he has one body or maybe several, two bodies or three bodies. In any case, he has three heads here, and also wings. It's quite clear here and here. And the only parallel I was able to find, I'm not specialist in that material, of course, is a depiction of a chariot of Helios in a Greek vase from Musée du Louvre, where three animals, one of them winged and one of them like a lion, we have here a lion face, we have here a wing, are driving their chariot. So at the beginning, I was thinking that it was an apotheosis at the end of the story of a hero. Yes, a good example comes also from Coptic Egypt with the deeds of Heracles around and the apotheosis of Heracles in the center. But now I am quite skeptical about that, first of all, because there are different heroes depicted outside, two or three. Another model which Michael also reminded me recently is the scene of the flight of Alexander, also round, and Alexander with demons in the demon chariot. Moreover, this depiction is quite often on lunettes above the entrance. So this is from Suzdal, from Russia, but all these depictions don't predate 11th century, and we have 8th century, as I believe. So even later are the depictions of the flight of Kaikovat, in Kaikavus, of course, yes, in Kaikavus, sorry, in Persian miniatures. So presently, I cannot give any. I do not even attempt at giving a literary or folklore prototype of all this story. And moreover, I am not sure that this all combines integrated into depiction of one and the same narrative. And above it, just few things I'm finishing. So one of the most done pieces there are the images of acrobats, which are between the roundels, which fill the whole scene. So not there is no free space on the outer semicircle of the painting. So they are half naked. They have very unusual faces. Some look more male, some look like female. And this reminds me, first of all, of a contemporary or slightly earlier depictions of apsaras and also flying, other flying beings in Indian art or in Buddhist Chinese art, where they fill all the available space between roundels in their painting of the cave. They don't have wings, they don't have musical instruments as apsaras used to have, but their depiction, their idea of filling the empty space with these images is very common in all of them. And finally, the final observation is the aesthetic similarities of this carved wood and painting from Shahristan. They seem to have been the same order, so they say the author tried to make to carve or to paint the very minimal detail to make it more most precise as possible. Also, I would say, without looking at the complete picture. So one has to look at side by side, little by little, to recognize all these minimal details which are painted with blue, above blue, and here filling all the field. And there is even better example which can prove that is the image of a demon which is attacked by two sides, the hawk, according to Nigmatov's idea, who is from one side, he is depicted frontally. The frontal depiction is very uncommon for Sogdian art, and the only example is this depiction of Nanaya from the minor throne hall in Shahristan, which is also a frontal view, which became later quite common in Central Asia. And also, if we look at his ears and we look at his hairstyle, hairdo, we find it also in the image of one of the demons from the minor throne hall. So that's what quite a number of very stray observations about this beautiful thing. And concluding, I would say that it is needed to study it in depth and to make the real documentation of this outstanding item to understand, actually, I believe, the best example of wood carving of Central Asia. Thank you very much for your attention.